Thank you very much. And I'd like to thank the organizers for putting together this nice workshop in this spectacular place. I was asked to give some kind of a pedagogical introduction or lightning review, so to speak, of deep brain instantons and type 2 orientifolds, and I'll try my best to be as self-contained as possible. So apologies in advance to the experts if you're bored. And also, I will refrain from extensive referencing during the talk. So clearly, there's a vast literature to be covered, and for example, there are review articles where you can get an overview of the original literature. So my plan would be to start with some type of an overview of the relevant objects which we're interested in. I will then go on to discuss zero modes of deep brain instantons with an application to the computation of a superpotential in our theories. And after discussing some applications, I will try and give some classifying overview of which terms can actually be generated by instantons. In particular, if there's time, I would like to discuss in somewhat more details so-called higher derivative F terms, and also comment on recent developments, including the discussion of background flux and the interplay with deep brain instantons. Okay, so we are interested in n equal 1 supersymmetric compactifications of type 2 orientifolds in four dimensions. So compactification on four-dimensional external space, which I take to be R13 or whatever, times internal Calabi-Yau manifold. And our vacuum will be defined by a collection of space-filling brains, of course. Which will wrap some internal cycle of our manifold. And in fact, one can basically treat all different cases on an equal footing for our purposes here. In particular, we will be interested, for example, in type 2A orientifolds with O6 planes, where the D6 brains wrap special Lagrangian 3 cycles to be supersymmetric, or type 2B orientifolds with O3, O7 planes, and correspondingly D3, D7 brains, either along, of course, a point internally for the D3 brains, or a holomorphic divisor. Four cycle for the seven brains. Respectively, the other orientifold projection with O5, O9 planes, and D5, D9 brains. So D5 brain would wrap in a holomorphic two cycle, and the D9 brain, of course, would wrap the whole Calabi-Yau and carry also vector bundles if necessary. So the resulting theory to which we would like to compute corrections or non-perturbative corrections is given by n equals 1 supergravity, of course, as you know, coupled to super young modes realized on these space-filling D-brains. And this theory is, of course, characterized by specifying the Keller potential as well as the holomorphic superpotential and the holomorphic gauge kinetic function. So while a computation of the Keller potential is generically very difficult because it is non-holomorphic and the structure is not very well under control, the situation for the superpotential and the gauge kinetic function is in principle slightly better because they are holomorphic quantities and are therefore protected by well-known non-renormalization theorems. So for example, the superpotential, of course, does not receive perturbative now in GS corrections beyond tree level. The holomorphic gauge kinetic function only receives one loop corrections in GS, but no higher. So in other words, for the superpotential and for the gauge kinetic function, non-perturbative corrections may become very important due to the absence of competing and, in general, stronger perturbative corrections, unlike for the Keller potential. And in particular, in situations where certain terms are absent in perturbation theory, so at tree level or at up to one loop in the gauge kinetic function, the non-perturbative correction can constitute actually the leading order, or the leading order contribution to a term. And therefore it is justified to try and analyze the instanton sector, even though one might argue that the perturbative sector is already as here not sufficiently understood. So cases where the instanton sector becomes very important are, of course, well known. So, for example, in the context of moduli stabilization in type 2b oriented folds of the type KKLT and its variants, the superpotential depends on Kähler moduli only via D-brain instantons, which is very important. Of course, there will be corrections in the Kähler potential, but at least for the superpotential, the instanton corrections are the only terms and therefore important. And a similar situation arises also in particular in the gauge sector of certain type 2 oriented folds, as we will come. So this is as a motivational justification why instantons can actually become important despite their suppression. So the non-perturbative sector, non-perturbative sector in GS, which we would like to analyze, is generated by microscopic objects, namely Euclidean D-brains, which we'll call E, which, unlike the D-brains, are localized in four dimensions, so they're just a point in space-time, but otherwise also wrap an internal cycle of the compactification manifold. So in type 2a, the relevant objects will be Euclidean D2 brain instantons, so E2 instantons, which wrap a special Lagrangian free cycle. For type 2b with O3 or 7 planes, we will have to look at E-1 or E3 brain instantons along a point in space-time and on the Calabi-Yau and along a holomorphic full cycle. And in type 1, so type 2b with O5 or 7 planes, the relevant objects will be E1 or E5 instantons, wrapping the whole Calabi-Yau or wrapping just a curve. So in field theory, the computation of instanton effects is in general very difficult because one first has to construct the solution of corresponding to the instanton, the topologically non-trivial solution, and then has to analyze the zero modes and do the actual computation. In string theory, in some sense, one is actually in a slightly better position because the world volume theory of these Euclidean D-brains, which is relevant, can be understood as an open string theory again. So it can be understood in perturbation theory, actually. So the world volume theory of this instanton is just given by the well-known open string theory of open strings with at least one end on the instanton. So these open strings will constitute what is normally an analogy with field theory called the instanton moduli space. So in particular, we will have massless open strings with one end on the instanton. Which will be the analog of the instanton moduli M0 to keep analogy with field theory. And in addition, there can also be massive modes. And the point is now to appreciate that only the massless modes, so first of all, these are open strings ending, as I said, on an instanton, but they are no fields that are present actually in the four-dimensional field theory of our brains, of course. So they are, in the sense, auxiliary fields, if you like, but they can be treated just in the same manner as if they were open strings between D-brains, just with certain caveats due to their localization in 4D. And one caveat, for example, is that only the massless open strings, only these massless instanton modes are actually physical modes in the sense that they can be on-shell because their momentum, they are localized in space-time, so only if the mass really is zero can we write down an on-shell vertex operator for these states. For the massive modes, this is not the case, so they can only contribute in situations where off-shell off-shell propagation of modes is allowed. So this is the main difference, so to speak, between the instanton and the D-brain sector.
M symbol?
Oh, this is just for future notation. This is the collection of massless modes and the collection of massive modes. So the only reason why I introduced this is now to write down the effective action, at least at an abstract level, of our instanton. It can be organized into three pieces, if you like. I should actually be writing here. So in total imperfect analogy with space-filling brains, so we will have one part that does not actually depend on these open string moduli at all. This is the it will only depend on the closed string moduli of our brain. So this is basically the one-point function on the instanton in conformal field theory. But in addition, so for a D-brain, this would be the DBI action plus the transcendence part, and this is what will go into the non-perturbative suppression of our instanton. In addition, we will have interaction terms, now abstract interaction terms, which involve our zero modes at disk level and at loop level. And again, as I said, at disk level, we can only introduce the massless modes because they are the only ones which are actually on shell. So these are interactions at disk level with insertion of massless modes. And we can have, in principle, loop interactions where also the massive modes can propagate.
Unorientable worlds will also contribute, or not?
Yes, in principle, yes. Exactly. So here, this would be a first-order loop, annulus, Möbius, exactly.
This
yes.
Is an S loop.
Yes, they're very important to get the right result, indeed. And now, so in string theory is, of course, actually perturbatively defined from the world sheet of our string. So in order to write down the non-perturbative contribution of such an object, one has to do some guesswork, because just the CFT doesn't tell us the rules, what we have to do. And of course, one guesses in analogy with field theory. And the guess is now that the contribution of such an instanton to the 4D effective action is basically given, as you know, by the integral over all moduli, massive and massless, of this whole instanton effective action. So in particular, we will have to integrate the massless moduli over our various interaction terms. From this, we will then pull down various operators, which will give, which will basically classify the type of contribution which we have, and we will see this in great detail. Then there is left the non-perturbative suppression factor due to our instanton volume, so to speak. And there is then what comes from integrating out the massive loop, the massive modes in the loop. So this is usually called the loop perfion, and it will be a function depending on the closed string moduli and on the open string moduli of our deep brains. This is as an overview. So for example, if we have a BPS instanton, this suppression factor here will just be given by the volume of the instanton plus, so this is what comes from the DBI part of the brain for an instanton for a supersymmetric brain, for a BPS brain, plus then the analog of the transcendence part, and of course higher terms if there are, for example, for a four brain instanton, for a D3 brain instanton, if it carries flux, then there will also be the induced flux terms. Okay, so this is just the general logic in an abstract. So let's fill this with content now, or try to at least.
Are you saying the B field equal to zero?
So the B field I would be including if I had gauge flux on the instanton. So in type two, actually, yeah, this is, for example, in type 2A, where the B field would not couple. So due to the difficulties associated with the Keller potential with the non-holomorphic sector, I'd like, of course, to focus in this talk on just holomorphic quantities. So superpotential and gauge kinetic function. So these are the objects which are associated with 1/2 superspace. And therefore, the instanton has to be BPS in order to contribute. We will see this momentarily, but it is clear intuitively. So in other words, we will be considering a BPS instanton defined in the following way. We have to be very careful now because we're in type 2. So a BPS instanton epsilon will be defined to be wrapping some internal cycle such that a hypothetical D brain along the same cycle would be n equal 1 supersymmetric. So such that some putative hypothetical D brain, which need not exist, is n equal 1 supersymmetric.
It also fills a D brain that wraps that, also fills space.
Yeah.
So it would be n equals 1 supersymmetric in the remaining four dimensions.
Exactly. And we have to be careful here because in an n equal 1 oriented fold, we start with two with n equal 2 to begin with, and this will actually lead to, or has led to, some confusion. And then the calculus. Well, the logic here is first determine the zero modes as such, then determine their interactions as moduli-dependent functions if possible, integrate them out and get the result. So this will be the basic logic. So for the calculus, the first step is to find the zero modes. And it's useful to classify them according to their space-time interpretation and also according to their origin in conformal field theory. So one part of zero modes are universal zero modes.
Can I ask one
yes, of course.
The setup? I mean, suppose you have a big D brain in your background, mm-hmm. then your Euclidean brain might be forced to meet it. And
yes.
That formally looks like it's not n equal 1 anymore. It
can intersect.
The intersection to be traverse and so on.
Yeah. It can intersect. It can be parallel, or on top of it, and from a non-trivial bound state. One case will be what we'll call a stringy instanton in a second, and the other will be basically a gauge instanton, okay. Or the stringy string theoretic realization of strong coupling phenomena. So we will have to talk about deformation zero modes. And then of so-called charged zero modes. And if one were more ambitious, one would not only have to look, of course, at not only more ambitious, but actually consistent, one has to look also at multi-instanton configuration. And in this case, there will be extra zero modes. But it will probably not discuss them today. So first, the universal zero modes. The universal ones are called universal because they have a nice space-time interpretation, an interpretation as the Goldstone modes associated with the breakdown of quaternary symmetry and the partial breakdown of supersymmetry due to the presence of the instanton. This is not true for the other modes. They do not have this interpretation. So since we're in type 2, this is now a speciality of type 2 oriented folds, we have actually to consider two different cases. The The first case is actually the generic case that an instanton is away from the orientifold. So the instanton is not equal to its orientifold image deprived. So something that we have in some orientifold plane here, we have some cycle gamma e, which lies of course somewhere crazily in there, and some other cycle e primed, and the two are not coincident. This is the generic situation. So in this case, we will first of all have, since the instanton in four dimensions is just point-like, we will have four bosonic zero modes, of course, due to the breakdown of Poincaré symmetry, due to this the location of the instanton, and its four superpartners. And these superpartners are the Goldsteinos, which arise as follows. So even though our Calabi-Yau 3 prior to orientifolding preserves an n equal 2 supersymmetry, so 8 supercharges, it is only the orientifold projection which cuts this basically into half, or in other words, the orientifold introduces a split, a decomposition into two orthogonal n equal 1 supersymmetries, each with four superchargers. In such a way that this n equal 1 is by definition the one that is preserved by the O-plane, by the projection, and also by our space between brains. So this is the one which we see on our D-brain. Now we saw that an instanton, and BPS instanton is one that wraps the same cycle as a D-brain that would preserve these supersymmetries, but it's not space-filling. The instanton is a point in 4D, and if one now computes the supersymmetries that are preserved by this object, one has to take into account that we have four transverse dimensions to the instanton in 4D. So we get an additional factor of four gamma matrices, and this will act differently on chiral and anti-chiral spinners. So in other words, the instanton, this instanton, preserves this n equal 1 supersymmetry. It lies in diagonally in the orthogonal one. So this is preserved by our BPS instanton, and this part here is preserved by the brains and by the orientifold. So in other words, so it preserves one half, so it will break one half, so it will have four associated Goldstone modes. Because so the instanton will wrap a cycle that would be supersymmetric if it were populated by a space-filling brain. So the internal part if one computes the supersymmetries which are preserved, this one would have to split into an internal and an external part as always. The internal part will be as for a D-brain, but for the external dimensions, we get additional gamma projectors because we're space-like in 4D, because we're transverse there. So we will get a minus sign and a plus sign for chiral and anti-chiral spinners, which means that the internal supersymmetries may have to be the opposite ones in order to accommodate for that minus sign. So the consequences, again, as we said, four zero modes, namely theta alpha and theta torba alpha dot. This will be theta alpha. This will be torba alpha dot. This is just my crazy notation. But the important point is that only one half of them is actually associated with the supersymmetries which are relevant in 4D. So this one here will be one half of the superspace in 4D, and this one here has nothing to do with the supersymmetries in 4D whatsoever. So one might think it's an object that has four superchargers, so it should contribute to a Keller potential, but this does not span the full superspace. So these objects here are a nuisance. We need to get rid of them, or we need to do things with them to make the object contribute. So And let me also stress that this distinguishes type 2 models from say M-theory compactification with M5 brains or heterotic models, where we start with N equal 1 to begin with. So this is, so to speak, a speciality, if you like, of type 2. Alternatively, we can of course consider brains which are which live on top of the oriented fold. So this would be the second case, OP, an instanton right there, or also an instanton transverse to it, in such a way that the cycle of the instanton is mapped to itself. In this case, these modes will be subject to projection. We know, for example, if we have a brain on a D brain just on an oriental plane, the gauge group is projected. It's projected from UN to SON. So the same projection will also act now on all the instanton zero modes. And there is the chance that these extra anti-chiral zero modes are actually projected out. This depends on the details of the cycle of the oriented fold projection. But the rule of thumb is the following. If the instanton wraps a cycle such that a space-filling D-brain along it would have symplectic gauge groups, then it will have the instanton will have a putative orthogonal gauge group. Just because for co-dimension four systems, the oriented fold projection changes. So if the instanton along gamma E is such that some space-filling D-brain along this cycle would have symplectic gauge group, then the actual instanton will have orthogonal gauge group. And in particular, if one now traces back to the details of the projection, one will find that x mu and theta alpha, in this case, survive, and tau bar alpha dot is projected out. But this is kind of a degenerate or a special situation.
So how the other way around, if the gamma E would have had orthogonal gauge symmetry?
Exactly, then it would be...
Then what happens?
Then it would be...
E would have a symplectic gauge.
Symplectic gauge. So we would have to put, so to speak, two D-brains, two instantons on top of the O-plane. We would need an SP2. So we would not have an actual single instanton contribution, if you like. And then these will be, so here these are anti-symmetrized, these are symmetrized. In the other case, it would be the opposite round. So these would be anti-symmetrized and these would be symmetrized.
But the tau bar alpha dot would still be
pretty. Yeah, they would still be there. We would have two of them, and I think these would survive.
They would not be projected out.
They would not be projected out.
In the other case.
Yeah.
What happens if I'm thinking of type 1 as type 2b with an oriented fold projection and no knowing?
In that case, if you do not switch on gauge flux on the instanton, you will be, for a 5-brain instanton, you would be exactly in that SP situation. So it would not contribute to the zero potential without further manipulations. Whereas for a one cycle, it would for an E1 instanton, it would be the other way around. In type 1, the D5 brains carry symplectic gauge groups, so the instanton would be E1. So E1 instantons in type 1 contribute. D5 instantons or E5 instantons contribute only if they carry certain flux and then form a bound state, etc. But I'm not going to
actually. I think you're assuming that gamma sub E is a spin manifold when you make this statement. Otherwise, if it's not spin, there might be some extra details. See, the rules for what kind of gauge symmetry you're going to have on the brain is going to change a little when you have when it wraps a non-spin manifold.
But for a holomorphic device, this would certainly be
holomorphic.
Yeah.
Nope. Delpezzo surfaces, for example, are not spin.
That's, but for the
well, it's spin C, right? So
but still, if it's not spin, then these rules change. Mm-hmm.
I agree. It's a difficult question to decide which which also already for the deep brain, right? A deep brain along it doesn't, yeah, it's, yeah. So are you aware of a way to do that without?
Yeah, I think I know what to do, but it's going to change.
Okay. Okay, so these were the universal modes. Next we have deformation modes. So these are the modes associated with the internal moduli, if you like, of the cycle. So the deformation or Wilson line moduli of the cycle along which the instanton wraps. So again, two cases. If the instanton is not mapped to itself, then each deformation mode will give rise to one complex boson, one complex bosonic mode, and chiral and anti-chiral partners, so two wild spinners. And if E equal to E primed, then we will project out, again, depending on the details, either the boson, and in this case, the anti-chiral part, or the chiral part. So for an O1 instanton of this type, we will have a projection. And again, I'm now listing the naive case, so to speak. That is true, at least when we have a CFT where we can actually check the results. So, for example, for an E3 brain, so in other words, we will have now to distinguish Wilson line moduli and deformation moduli. For an D3 brain instanton, the Wilson lines are counted by H1,0. The deformation modes H2,0. So this is true, of course, also for deep brains. The special case is now really that either one or the other survives. So here, in this case, when this survives, we have really the deformation and the anti-chiral modes. Whereas in this case, we just have the Wilson line. So this is what I would be calling the chiral part. For an E2, we have the deformation Wilson lines are on the same footing for a special Lagrangian. They are counted by the first Betti number of the cycle. And now for a CFT, on the torus, for example, one can check that this is the combination. The anti-symmetric and the symmetric ones give rise to Wilson line and deformation modes, respectively. And for E1 instanton, it's this way.
What do you mean by an O1 projection? You mean the gauge group on the instanton is
O1 in the sense that the gauge group on a D brain would be SP2 along that cycle. It's in this sense. But this is just a nomenclature that's being used in there.
So there's a gauge theory on the E instanton, right? Is it a Z2 gauge theory?
Or? Yes, in that sense.
Let's see, then what do you mean by Wilson line?
By Wilson line modulus, I mean the one which we get by reducing along one cycle on the brain. So for a D brain, we have two types of moduli on a homomorphic devices, those that are counted by H10, and one might wish to think of them as Wilson lines because one reduces the.
No, I'm lost. I'm sorry. These are continuous moduli, right?
Right.
Okay.
If you don't like the name, then
Z2. What do you mean by a continuous Wilson line?
If you don't like the name, then forget it. I just mean this.
But which field did you reduce along that cycle to get this?
For a D brain, that's all in analogy to a D brain. For a D brain, I would be reducing the internal gauge field. The internal part of the gauge.
But that's my point. That's why I'm so confused. There is no continuous connection if your structure group is Z2.
Exactly. It's really just in. I take it back. Pretend I've never talked about Wilson lines. I mean these objects.
But what are those objects?
They're the objects that the moduli associated with the one.
Oh, I understand what the cohomology group is. I mean, what is it physically?
Well, physically, so the only way I can understand them is to say if we place a space-filling D-brain on that same cycle, this would be, this moduli would come from...
A D-brain with what structure, with what gauge group?
A D-brain with a U1 gauge group.
Ah.
Just a single D-brain.
And so it would have moduli.
Yes.
And now you're saying that those are still moduli of this instanton
exactly.
with a Z2 gauge.
Thing. Yes.
But it should be possible to say what those deformations are doing to that, to the Euclidean field theory on the instanton, right? Does my question make sense?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't want to understand them as breaking gauge symmetry, but if one switches on some.
Well, there's certainly not Wilson lines if your structure group is Z2. That's the only.
Yeah. It's too tough. Maybe if you have a better understanding, I don't either. So this is what I meant by that. I didn't want to arouse confusion. So the only statement is there are some moduli which get projected out in such a way that we are only left with the chiral spinner, and there are other moduli which we get in which case we get a complex boson and an anti-chiral spinner. And in both cases, both objects will then make the instanton contribute to different to different quantities in the 4D field theory. Okay, and these two types of moduli so far from a CFT perspective really come from open strings starting and ending on the same instanton. So both the moduli with whatever interpretation and the universal ones. So, but in the context of D brains in a type 2 oriented fold, there can of course also be boundary changing strings. So strings with one end of the D brain and one end on the instanton. So charged zero modes, in the sense that they are charged under the gauge group of a D brain. So open strings between some real, now this is an actual D brain which we have in our system, and our instanton. So the situation will be like this. Here's some Clavier 3. We have a particular brain filling four dimensions. We have an instanton sitting at a point. So this will be the D brain internally. This will be our instanton, some totally different cycle. And at this intersection here, we will now have modes stretching between the two. They are sometimes called Ganna modes. We discussed them in the F-theory context already 10 years ago. So there, and the point is now that their emergence is totally analogous to the emergence of massless open strings between space-filling brains. And actually, mutatis mutandis, the same rules apply to getting these modes and also to determining their interactions. So again, we have to consider two cases which come back to your question about the meeting of the instanton with the D-brain. So if we have here the brain and the space-filling, the instanton and the space-filling brain along two totally different cycles, then if we want to quantize the string, we have to take into account four Dirichlet-Neumann boundary conditions, of course, in R13, and twisted boundary conditions in the internal space. So twisted meaning the brains are not parallel, so that we can think of this as due to an angle for type 2a, or due to a difference of gauge flux, if you're in type 1 or in type 2b, etc. So we have twisted boundary conditions internally, So if one goes back, if one goes through the computation, then one finds no bosonic moduli, no bosonic charged modes, and precisely one Grassmann mode, per intersection point now in type 2, and or of course counted by suitable cohomology groups then in type 2b. So this is a Grassmann parameter that stretches between the instanton and the brain or the other way around, which is determined by the intersection number of our cycle. In total analogy as with the deep brains. The only difference being there are no bosonic modes, and the fermion is actually just a single Grassmann mode in 4D. The second case is if the instanton is really parallel to a D-brain, so this would be case A, this would now be case B, parallel and of course on top of each other so that we have massless modes. In this case, one finds actually more modes. One finds now also bosonic modes going in both directions, and also fermionic modes going in both directions. And these are actually the stringy realization of the well-known ADHM moduli. So in other words, this is, of course, as has been known for a long time, the string theoretic realization of a gauge instanton. So this will be actually a gauge instanton. Or it has an interpretation of a gauge instanton, whereas this case does not have an obvious interpretation in terms of a gauge instanton. So it's sometimes called in the literature nowadays stringy or exotic instanton.
What is the reason why there is no bosonic zero mode in this case?
Because of the four-Dirichlet-Neumann boundary conditions that will shift the vacuum energy. And therefore, the boson is actually projected out.
So this means there is no tachyon, and this means there is also no boundary forming.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. Yes. Okay. So now let's try and apply this to the computation of some terms, or at least the abstract computation of some terms. So let's now focus on a superpotential contribution. So we know a superpotential is associated with a measure of this type. So this means, in particular, that there should be no effective, so unlifted extra zero modes in the instanton beyond the four Goldstones and these two chiral Goldstein nodes. So all extra zero modes, which we have now discussed, must either be absent in the first place, or they have to be lifted, respectively saturated, meaning that there is some interaction in the instanton effective action which allows us to pull them down, but they have to be saturated without inducing higher derivative terms. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a superpotential. So the simplest case is obviously the first one. So this would be what one calls rigid O1 case, so the instanton on top of the O plane, so we are really in the universal sector left with only this, and no further deformation modes. And now the only question is whether or not these charged zero modes spoil the game or not. So in the first case, we have no charged zero modes. So in other words, the instanton really is away from all deep brains. So the instanton is really isolated from all space-time filling brains. And in this case, we will get a contribution just the superpotential contribution will just be a function of the open closed moduli of our convectification. So the superpotential will involve some Pfaffian, depending on the closed strings and possibly also the open strings, times now the exponential suppression for BPS and synton again, schematically of this type. So of course, this class of instantons is very well known to all of us because it's, for example, the one that was used in KKLT-like frameworks to stabilize moduli in type 2b. This would be the modulus controlling the size of the instanton. It would just be the volume. So this induces a particular volume Keller moduli dependence in the superpotential. On the other hand, if we have these charge zero modes, we need to saturate them, because otherwise integration of the Grassmann mode, which is not saturated, would give zero. So in the presence of these charge zero modes lambda, we get instead something which has to involve open string fields between the D-brain. I'll come to this in a second. Again, now here times this exponential suppression and all these extra dressings.
Yeah, I have a question about the first case. Mm-hmm. So if the cycle that the instanton is wrapping is not simply connected, then you should probably, I would imagine, sum over flat gauge fields. So since that's why it was a proposal that the gauge group was actually Z2 and not trivial.
Right.
So then you would actually have a sum of terms.
Right.
So then my next question would be, how well controlled are these functions?
Yeah.
Because you can have cancellation.
Not very well controlled, yeah.
I mean, exactly. What fields are involved? I mean, do you know what operators you're taking the Pfaffian of?
In the, I would like to discuss this after first and going through the systematics here. But in this Pfaffian can be thought of as the basically as the exponent of the one loop threshold correction to the theory associated with that same cycle. And so the dependence on the open and closed fields should actually be the same as the one in the holomorphic part of the threshold correction. But I fully agree. All I'm saying, I should have said this now, it's really for a one instanton computation, of course, cancellations are an issue. But the situation is somewhat better in this case, for a reason that we will see momentarily. But let me first discuss the general idea. So the simplest example of this second type with instanton zero modes, again, which we hear some instanton, there's some D-brain, and our color BR3. We would now say consider brain DA, brain DB, single brains with a U1A times U1B gauge theory. And suppose that we have here some fields going from A to B, with, say, charges minus 1a and plus 1b. These are now physical fields in four dimensions. Now, suppose we have some instanton along some cycle. Then, as we said, at the intersection, so this is now in type 2a, but mutatis mutandis, of course, also in type 2b, where this geometric setup will be more complicated. We will now have these charged zero modes. And if the intersection numbers are accordingly, we will have, for example, a mode going from A to E, and here a mode from E to B. This is B to A. And these modes are charged also under these gauge groups. So for example, lambda B, lambda A has charged minus 1b and plus 1a, 0. So we see, obviously, it is clear that there might be a three-point function involving, so an analog of a Yukawa, if you will, involving this physical field and the two zero modes. And the nice thing now is the way to check that is to simply replace in your mind the instanton with the deep brain and compute the coupling. And the claim is that the coupling will be the same as if one replaced each instanton just with the deep brain. And so all one has to do understand exactly as much as one has to understand when doing perturbative computations. So that's the message, and it is as hard or easy as in that sense. So in particular, the instanton effective action will contain an interaction term involving the lambda fields. And this, of course, is a function that depends on the moduli, depends on the closed string moduli. It will depend on the open string moduli of our brains. For example, in type 2A theory, this would involve the sum of the wall sheet instantons stretching now in this triangle. But again, the computation is basically identical to what one does in perturbative string theory. And then the logic is obvious, so we will, so to speak, integrate out our modes, e to the s naught, which is the volume, plus now here c lambda phi lambda. And this will basically give rise, schematically speaking, to a superpotential term of this type, schematically.
What is c?
This is just the value of this coupling. The function that multiplies this coupling if we compute it in CFT. So if one just
function of the moduli, or
it is a function of the moduli. It is a function of the closed string moduli, and possibly even the open string moduli. Open string moduli meaning the ones of our deep brains. So this is what one gets when one computes the this three-point coupling in CFT. So it's the physical coupling, if you like. So two things to mention. The first is obviously this coupling violates U1 symmetries in 4D, because this object here is charged under U1A, U1B. Now, you know, if we have just a single D-brain, each of these U1 factors will become massive by Green-Schwarz, or actually the Strickelberg mechanism. So this is not a violation of the gauge symmetry, which is broken anyways, but it's a violation of global symmetries. So the instanton can break these global symmetries, and therefore induce a term which would not be there perturbatively. So this is precisely one example where the instanton interaction is the leading interaction, because it's absent perturbatively, and therefore it's justified to compute it, or it's important to compute it. So we have the leading contribution due to the instanton. A second thing is, usually in instanton computation, one is alerted that one has to sum over all possible instantons. There will be cancellations, and so a single instanton as such has nothing to say at the end of the day, because the phases might cancel. The same applies here. It is just that the class of instantons one has to look at is much smaller, because we need these extra zero modes to give rise to this particular term. So it might be that there's a whole bunch of devices, say, in type 2B, which can contribute to the superpotential principle, but only a small set, or ideally only one of them, can actually contribute to this coupling due to the appearance of these zero modes. And this is something that one can check easily. So if one is in a situation where they really have just one, say, now in type 2B device with these corresponding intersection numbers, we know that only, and if it is rigid, so if there are no deformation modes, we know that there cannot be a cancellation.
Again, I'm wondering about if the pink divisor is not simply connected.
Yes, good.
Then you'll still have to.
Yeah.
I mean, I would guess that this C function of yours is some section of the line bundle, so there'll be some issue.
And so that it is?
That the C, I'm just guessing that the C function is going to be actually a section of a line bundle.
It's actually the wider compactification of data.
It is a section of a line bundle.
Yeah.
So there'll be some issue with some of those terms and cancel.
Right. But at least, so for example, in some toroidal toy models, so to speak, one can find examples where just a single device is rigid.
Gravity is simply connected, and there's no gauge there.
Yeah. But of course, in general, it's a hard issue. So let me just ask, how's the time deal? So we're now. Okay. So then, let me just state that there is actually a relatively precise prescription not to compute the whole instanton term, but at least to extract the superpotential part, which is holomorphic. And so the reason is that only holomorphic pieces can contribute, and in that case the statement is that as far as the one loop the loop Pfaffian is concerned, only one loop diagrams actually contribute. So in other words, the Pfaffian for the relevant for the superpotential will be the exponent of all annulus and Möbius diagrams. So with one end on the D-brain. And ends on all, sorry, with one end on the instanton, and ends on all D brains in the system. And in fact, we have to take out the massless modes in that case, because this would be an overcounting. So only the massive modes, which are optional, which can propagate in the loop, will contribute here. And this will give rise to an exponential. Now, again, as far as the holomorphic part is concerned, basically for the one loop, threshold. For the one loop threshold of a theory that would wrap the same brain. So if you take the instanton cycle and define again a putative U1 theory, say, on that, then this will have in this background, you take this as a probe brain, this will have a threshold correction, and the holomorphic piece of this will be the exponent of it will be the Pfaffian. And in addition, in more general situations, there are also precise prescriptions for how to deal these disk diagrams with insertion of lambda zero modes. Namely, precisely two charged zero modes are allowed, because otherwise holomorphicities would not cancel.
I have 45 seconds. 30 minutes more.
30. Yeah, that was my confusion. Are we 1.5 or 60?
Yeah, it's fine. It's 1.5.
Okay. But nonetheless, I mean, I see shocked faces now. So, free to. you don't have to spend the whole morning here.
One question. So, in this function, we see that we have that. Does it make sense before stabilizing complex structure? So is that a function of complex moduli or not? That determines what is going to be a holomorphic cycle.
That's right. Well, it will. So in type two, no, I think it would be dependent on precisely. Yes, of course. So in type 2a, this would depend on the Kähler moduli, for example.
So,
yes, it will depend on the complex moduli. I'll come to that. So the point is, I'll come to, actually that's exactly what I wanted to, what I would have wanted to say, if, yeah, what I should have said now. So we can do these results from two sides. So on the one hand, for someone who's interested in the gauge theory, this might be good news, depending on their prejudice towards these terms. So the message is terms can be generated that would be absent perturbatively. On the other hand, we will also have now face exactly that challenge of in the context of moduli stabilization. This comes back to the question which Joe asked last week, namely only those cycles which are away from the D brains, which do not intersect any brain, are actually relevant for the for the stabilization of moduli, in the sense that all other cycles will have some open string fields in front, and at least if we insist for phenomenological reasons that these open string fields do not get a BEF, this cycle will not give an F term, so to speak, for stabilization purposes. So we have a challenge in moduli stabilization into B. So what I said is not exactly true. If this were some hidden sector. Now we're in the context of trying to get the standard model or whatever from deep brains. If we are in a hidden sector, then of course we can allow for these chiral fields, which will be recombination moduli, to acquire a VEF. And in that case, we can search for a solution where we get non-vanishing VEF of the bosonic part in here, and then the object will be relevant for moduli stabilization. But if these are, for example, the fields associated with the standard model, then we insist that there is no VEF, at least not at the string scale. And this means that those cycles which intersect the standard model brains, now in these applications, the volume of these cycles cannot be stabilized with deep brain instanton. So the volume of cycles intersecting chirally the MSSM brains must be stabilized differently. So for example, by D terms or by loop corrections in the Kähler potential, possibly. But I think it's fair to say that this is an issue. And it's a generic issue, because we will, as soon as we have a chiral sector which we which we'd like to understand as our MSSM, we'll have this trouble. And in particular, this is one example where the local model building philosophy might break down, in the sense that one cannot assume that we just first stabilize the moduli, then we put in some brain somewhere, and then we put in everything together. And the only thing is that in most cases we won't satisfy the tadpoles, but in many cases we still will, and these are then our back here. This is not correct, because the analysis the analysis of stabilizing moduli is really intrinsically linked to the existence of this chiral brain sector, and this is a global issue. Okay, since we have so much time, I would at least try to mention further applications now, phenomenologically, which you may or may not be interested in from your background. For example, first of all, this innocent term has become prominent in the past year in the context of F-term supersymmetry breaking and gauge mediation, say in type 1 models or in F-theory models. So it's basically exactly this mechanism here that is studied in order to break supersymmetry in the gauge sector without having to invoke complicated gauge dynamics. And also in this case, the suppression factor of the instanton is very welcome, because it can give rise naturally or without too big tuning to a small F-term. So applications would be Polonyi type breaking, Suzy breaking, with the naturally generated hierarchy. And there are many more applications. For example, one can generate Majorana masses for right-handed neutrinos. They are also forbidden perturbatively in a simple situation like this, where this would be our SU3 times SU2 standard model with some additional U1s, such that a particular combination of them will be U1 hypercharge. Then here we will identify a field as a right-handed neutrino. And as we see, a term M Majorana is obviously forbidden perturbatively, because it has charge under these two U1s. So again, we would need an instanton to intersect in such a way that now we have two zero modes here, because we have to pull down two terms from the exponent to get this coupling. in this case, of course, one has to make sure that the suppression factor is not too big, because at least for phenomenological applications, we would like the Majorana masses to be at an intermediate scale, say 10^11 to 10^14, I think is the phenomenologically preferred scale. So this means that some tuning has to be involved if one believes that this is the reason for Majorana masses, in order to make sure that the suppression factor is not too big. And another application that was mentioned in last week's talk by Thomas on gut model building in F-theory versus in type 2b is this famous 10-10-5 coupling in SU5 guts. In that case, we would model some SU5 theory. So this is our O plane. This is our U5A sector. This is the orientifold image. We will here have the 10 localized between the brain and this image. We will have a second brain. This is a U1B metabrain, with, say, the 5 Higgs sitting here in the bifundamental. And the point is, again, that the 10 now has charge 2,0 under the U1A, because it starts on U1A and ends on U1A prime. So that gives you a unit of 2. Whereas the 5 now, depending on how it is oriented, in this case, for example, would have -1a + 1b. So this coupling is obviously absent perturbatively as well, in type 2b at least, not in F theory. In F theory, it can be present because we have totally different brain configurations. But in type 2b and also in type 2a, it is absent. So it has to be generated, if at all, then by an instanton, which such that now 6 zero modes can be soaked up, 2 per disk, and we can pull down this triplet coupling. But there, of course, the issue comes again: suppression might be too high, so we need a small volume, and this might actually disfavor perturbative gut model building. On the other hand, for the flipped SU5, this would just give the correct hierarchy which we need in order to get the down quark mass. Okay, so but enough of that. So these are just to convince you that there are interesting applications also for phenomenological purposes.
And H flux will change your story, or
H flux.
Well, I mean, if you're going to do this in sort of a modulized, stabilized world.
Yeah, it will lift more moduli. And for example, just Sebastian can tell you about a nice application on supersymmetry mediation, for example. So there are many phenomenologically interesting applications. Okay.
How to describe everything with H flux? I mean, you have no color view.
On type 2b. Well, exactly. So it is relatively well understood, but has been for some time in type 2b with freeform flux, where we have conformal color VR. In type 2a, of course, it's difficult. And even in type 2b, I think it's not really understood. But we'll come to that. Before that, let me go back one step. We got very much into detail of a particular application, but I would like to really give you an overview of what is possible, so to speak. So other F terms or F term contributions. So let us classify this a little so that you. Yeah. So first of all, what we were discussing is this. A one instanton where the instanton is self-identical under orientifold. And we were discussing the case where we had no parallel d-brains, so we had a stringy instanton, or an exotic instanton, if you like. So our universal modes in this case were just the two which we want for an F-term. Extra fermionic, I mean now, except for the charged ones, because we know now how to deal with them. Extra fermionic modes in the first case, if there are none, then we get a superpotential. So this is what we have been doing. But then we saw at the beginning that there are more general cases. So the first case, which I would be calling Wilson lines, if you hadn't complained, is the one where we just end up with the left chiral moduli, so to speak, in this case. And there it turns out that such type of an instanton can correct the gauge kinetic function. A D-brain, of all the D-brains, in principle, of the D-brains in our system. And in fact, these zero modes have to be soaked up in a one-loop diagram, but this can happen in just such a way as to generate this term. But I'm not going to go more into the details, just to give yeah, this overview. In addition, so the second case would be where we have anti-chiral deformation modes left. In this case, we will get what are called multi-fermion or higher derivative or Beasley-Witten F-terms. And in this case, it is for the vector multiplets, actually. I'll say a little bit more about that after finishing with this systematics. The second case, this is the generic one, if you will. Sometimes called U1 instanton. The instanton is not identical to itself under projection. If again we have no brain, so parallel, if we again in a stringy situation, these are our universal zero modes. So now we have to take care of this guy. And what this will induce, it will also induce multi-Fermi F terms. Again, just a second for more details, but in this case for the hypers, for the hypermultiplets. If there are modes in the EE prime system, which I didn't discuss now, these modes can lift these the anti-chiral Goldstein nodes, and we will get a superpotential contribution, possibly, if everything works out. So these objects can contribute to the superpotential, but it involves more work. And finally, the case I could have discussed it up there again, but as well, but now I'm discussing it just here. If we have NC parallel brains, the instanton will be a gauge instanton. So we will here get these additional ADHM modes. So we will get superpotential, etc. Whatever the corresponding, so ADS superpotential, whatever the corresponding instanton would do in field theory. And a special case where we just have one parallel brain, this is very interesting, that we actually do not have a gauge instanton interpretation because a U1 doesn't have a strong coupling, of course. But still, formally, one can soak up the zero modes in a similar manner, and one can still get a superpotential. So we see, even in this more difficult situations with extra modes, we can get superpotentials if we provide means to lift these modes. Not surprisingly, but there exists some, either by placing a brain on top of it, or in suitable situations where we can lift instanton prime zero modes. Not a direct one, because a U1 theory, one would not. But there are attempts to relate this by. Excuse me. Exactly. Yeah. So for in a non-commutative case, you would have such an instanton. Also in field theory. And here this is absence of background flux. So let me just very briefly say what is meant by these multi-Fermi F-terms, because they are kind of new, if you like, and relatively new given the status of, given the age of n equal 1 supergravity, these are relatively new developments. Beasley and Witten, this is my only reference, they found that there are additional F terms that are not possible, half BPS terms possible in n equal 1 supersymmetry, which do not come from a superpotential, and they can be written basically as something like that. Integration of a half superspace. Now I'm just taking the simplest case where we have some tensor depending holomorphically on the chiral fields. And this is the type of object they considered. Of course, with obvious generalizations, you can have several of these gentlemen and of these and corresponding higher tensor here. And the point is, so the what this object is it is just the covariant derivative of the supersymmetric covariant derivative. So this is meant to be the corresponding spin times a derivative in obvious notation. And of course, what happens is that we will get, for example, two derivative terms from soaking up the thetas in this integral. Or in general, we will get higher fermionic and their fermionic partners. And in general, we'll get higher fermionic partners. So this will, in general, now at the fermionic level, give rise to two chiral and two, and in general, n anti-chiral terms. But the point is that Beasley and Witten showed that this can nonetheless be supersymmetric, provided certain constraints on this tensor are satisfied, which makes sure that this object cannot be written globally as a D-term. So it looks like a D-term locally, but not globally, and this is due to a certain cohomology condition that this tensor has to satisfy. So the point is now that this is exactly the type of modes of terms that we expect in these situations where we have extra deformation modes and also extra Tobar modes. And indeed, at least in simple cases where one has a CFD, etc., one can first this case, one can convince oneself that there exist couplings in the instanton effective action between these deformation, anti-chiral deformation modes and these derivatives involving now the vector moduli, or what is descending from the vector multiplet from n equal 2. So this schematically will contain terms like this, some function times and these moduli now, this is, for example, in type 2a, this will be the Keller moduli, and in type 2b, the complex structure. So for example, if we have just one such anti-chiral deformation mode, soaking it up will give rise precisely to such a term in 4D. Even though I have to say that the state of the art in actual computations here is not very, very far. So basically, there is the general argument that this is what should happen, but it would be interesting to see this done explicitly and to really determine which terms are actually produced. This is, so in a way, it's just for the systematics. On the other hand, if we have here our universal modes, they will also couple in the instanton effective action like this, but they have a coupling involving now the hypermultiplet, the hypers. So for a generic E1 instanton, so to speak, where nothing else lifts our Tobar modes, we will get a two derivative of this type, Beasley-Witten type coupling for certain hypermultiplets. Okay, and finally, just some very quick remarks about the inclusion of background flux, even though I'm certainly not the expert in this. Oh, sorry, maybe I should have left it. Okay. So the general logic is, of course, clear that flux will induce interaction terms in the effective action of the instanton. So we will have some interaction terms of the type, some operator depending on flux times, say, our anti-chiral deformation modes and generalizations thereof. So integrating out these terms will bring down this operator and may generate a superpotential, even though without the flux we would actually be generating a derivative term. So in a way, part of the story to understand this is, first of all, to understand these couplings in the instanton effective action. So we have to find these couplings. And there are basically two strategies to do that, either by dimensional reduction of the supergravity action in background flux, or more recently, there have also been advances to do that directly in CFT, at least in a free field situation. This can be done by computing, say, three-point functions with two moduli insertions and one closed string field insertion.
Of course, it will also restrict which cycles you can wrap also. In general, right? If you turn on the fluxes, then...
Of course, yes, absolutely. Yes, I'm assuming here that the cycle is not killed yet by the Fried-Witten anomaly. Thank you.
And also the Riemann-Riemann fluxes will restrict which cycles you can wrap.
Indeed, that's very important. So, Fried-Witten, etc. anomaly. Indeed. So the schematic result, due to the state of the art of the understanding of fluxes in type 2 in the presence of brains, I think it's fair to say that that the most explicit results at the moment are still given in the context of type 2b, but that's just a technical problem with freeform flux. And schematically, the flux will couple to the various modes in the following way. For a D3 brain instanton, so the 0,3 part will couple to the thetas. The 3,0 will couple to the tau bars. Then we have a 2,1 primitive part that will couple to our deformation modes. And to these other modes. I'm assuming now here U1 instanton. So I'm assuming that that nothing is projected out, so that both parts are really present. And then, of course, the conjugate 1,2 chi chi plus 1,2 gamma gamma. So in particular, what has been discussed in detail in the literature, in various contexts, also in M theory, is what happens in supersymmetric situations. Supersymmetric meaning where the flux is supersymmetric by itself already. So if we have, say, for example, a GKP type model where we have only 2,1 primitive flux, such that this is supersymmetric, and in particular such that all F terms with respect to the complex, the Kähler, and the Dilaton here, of the flux-induced superpotential are vanishing. In that case, deformation modes, so these types of modes can be soaked up, and an instanton can contribute to the superpotential, despite these chi-bar modes. And to conclude, of course, it's at the moment, I think, from my point of view, an open question how to interpret the more general case when we have also more general flux. So first of all, we know that if the only sources in our vacuum are really D3 brains, all planes, and anti-D3 brains, as in GKP, then for the existence of a vacuum, we can only have 2,1 and 0,3 flux, and to be supersymmetric, it has to be 2,1 primitive. So these other cases do not arise. There's no trouble. But in general, one can argue that if we also have non-perturbative effects, say D-brains, which contribute to a superpotential, irrespective of the flux, then this condition can be relaxed. And then, now, of course, we have to solve the answer, what happens to these naively non-supersymmetric contributions in the superpotential. And actually, I would like to leave this as an open question. It's not entirely clear to me what one has to do here. Because one sees that naively one might run into contradictions. Say if one now switches on a 0,3 flux, one might naively get a non supersymmetric term. So something has to be wrong with that logic, and I'm sure it has a solution. It's just so to speak as an outlook. So understand better the flux instanton part, not only from getting the terms, but also from interpreting. I think it's fair to say that some questions are still open here. Furthermore, I talked exclusively about F terms for good reason. So the computation of D terms is, of course, much harder, and it would be nice to see how far one can go. And finally, I also discussed only actually single instanton contributions. But in general, of course, we have to sum up all, and we want to not only to get a hand-wavy argument, but result, but we want the exact result. So we know that in hadronic compactifications, by mirror symmetry, etc., there are nice methods to get exact instanton expansions from classical duals. So it would be nice to extend this program, of course, also in the D-brain instanton case. So I think there's still lots to do here, and I would like to thank you for your attention.
What is the corresponding configuration in heterotic dual for this exotic instanton, like O1?
What the corresponding dual is?
Heterotic sign.
For an exotic, so in E1 instanton in type 1 will be dualized to a heterotic instanton there, and to Welch-Ried instanton in E, for example, in type 1. So I think it will be Welch-Ried instanton.
Yeah,
and in particular, these charged modes, these charge couplings should be possible to get the same terms, I think, also from Welch-Ried instantons. So at least these charged zero modes should be present also in that case.
More questions?
This kind of flux instanton interaction in supergravity, we're again assuming this trick that you have, like you can think of the Euclidean D-brain as the usual D-brain.
And then
are we sure that is correct? I mean, if it leads to some contradiction, right, that you say.
Yeah, good point. So that's how it is done. From
the CFT results agree with this kind of.
Yeah. The CFT results agree with the supergravity result. But probably there's just something wrong in the logic, so that one has to do the effective field theory right.
Okay, I don't see any further questions, so thank you.